Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And welcome to Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host, and we are so excited. In our tower today, we have folks from Westminster Choir College. Now, most of you know that I'm a graduate of Westminster, and it's my favorite place on the earth for musicians and music making. And who do we have here today but Dr. Joe Miller, the conductor of the choir, the head of the choral programs. And we have even the dean, Dr. Marshall Onofrio, who is here with us. And why are they in our tower today? Because their wonderful choir is in our cathedral. And we are going to tell you all about the history of this amazing school and all of the things about this tour and the 100th anniversary of this wonderful institution. So, Joe and Marshall, welcome. It is so good to have you.
Thanks, John. Thank you for being with us.
Well, Dr. Miller has decided that he wants to start this program with music, and I think that's an excellent idea. Dr. Miller, tell us what we're going to listen to first.
We're going to listen to I Sat Down Under His Shadow by Edward Bairstow.
And here it is, and this is the Westminster Choir, and we will be right back. That was amazing. It was so beautiful. What a great way to start, because we do sit down under the shadow of Dr. Finley Williamson. Tell us who that great man is.
John Finley Williamson was the founder of our school. He is really the engine that continues to drive the school today, because his vision was so deep and so enormous that it still lives on. John Finley Williamson had the idea that church musicians and church music should be at the level, the highest level of any other music. So that means that it should not only serve the church and the people of the church, but should serve the world. And the best way that he knew to do that was to try to get the choir into places where they were singing with major symphony orchestras, that they were touring all over the world, so that the reach of the choir could be everywhere.
And this choir just didn't get hatched in Princeton, did it? It started in Ohio, right?
It started at Westminster Presbyterian Church. You know, one of the things that we always, that's always something to laugh about, is everyone thinks that when you say Westminster that we're from England, but we're not. We're from a small Presbyterian church in Dayton, Ohio, and that's where the choir began. And he began building this choir for services, and that led to him wanting more training for the choir. So voice lessons and theory lessons and diction. And that led to him forming a school that began meeting there. So it was a kind of all hands on deck to try to make this choir the greatest that it could be.
Well, when you think about 100 years ago, I mean, a guild of organists was still issuing, certificates, because there weren't music programs. You couldn't just say, I'm going to go get my bachelor's in organ degree or choral conducting or sacred music, for heaven's sakes. So to start a school like this is pretty phenomenal. He even coined the phrase minister of music, right? I mean, that was kind of a new concept, even, that a musician would be a real part of the ministerial team.
Yes. Yeah. It was a ministry. And we, of course, see that minister of music is used as a common term in our profession today. He had some help along the way, too. First, he had his wife, Rhea, who was an instrumental part of this. But also, he met someone named Catherine Talbot. And Catherine began to support the choir and their touring and their work financially to help them and support them. And that was the engine that eventually led the choir to leave Dayton, Ohio, and move to Ithaca, New York for a short amount of time. And then finally, moving in the early 30s to Princeton, New Jersey, where it's housed today.
And was she responsible for building much of the infrastructure of the first campus?
You know, I'm not really sure if she was still certainly deeply supporting the school, but once they moved to Princeton, there were other people to help. The choir school began in Nassau Presbyterian Church.
Yes, right down the street.
That's right. And, of course, we have a major theological seminary there. And so there was a lot of great synergy in Princeton and a lot of people helping. Along with Catherine Talbot, the school formed its deep roots there.
Well, I was amazed, even as an alumnus, to look at the tours that began right away. I mean, within 2 years, he was already touring to some major spaces in Cincinnati and Philadelphia, even the White House, even. And by 1929, he was already taking European tours. So no grass was growing under his feet. He was on the move to turn this into a major place, even from the very beginning. Singing with major symphony orchestras. That's phenomenal that musicians in the church would make that level. I mean, those of us who have served the church, I've done this for 46 years now, you know, still suffer from the, what do you do during the week? You know, the idea that you would actually be a trained musician doing what we do, I think is the hardest piece of our profession, frankly, is to say, yes, we are trained musicians. We're not just volunteers. We're people that worked hard on our degrees and people that, honed our craft. And performance is not a dirty word. You know, we want every liturgy, every mass, every service to be a performance at the highest level. Because it's for the highest person, you know, the highest being.
So, see, John Finley Williamson still lives on within you, John.
Yes, well, and within all of us that it went to that school. You know, it's a treasure that I and all the people that I sent there, most of the thanks I ever get is for making me go to the choir college. I taught at Duquesne University during my Pittsburgh years, and it used to just make them so angry that I would not promote the graduate students in staying at Duquesne, even though I taught in the graduate school. But I would somehow siphon off the very best ones and send them to the choir college, which I was proud to do, even though it always, ruffled feathers. But it was great. But this is such a great tradition, and right from the beginning became a great tradition. And so Williamson, how long did he stay at the school?
Well, that's a good question. He stayed until the late 50s. He stayed at the school till the late 50s, and then for the next decade, there were people that had studied with Williamson that kept on that tradition. So there were many hands that were taking part in trying to continue what he was doing. And that continued through the 60s until the hiring of Joseph Flummerfelt, who was kind of the second major force.
Yes, he was the second major guru. I'm proud to say that I'm one of the disciples of that guru who we just lost last year, but what a treasure he was to all of us. But you kind of saw that in other schools. You saw the McCurdy tradition continue on at Curtis, you know, where if you weren't a student of McCurdy, you wanted to be a student of McCurdy. So I'm sure that same Williamson discipleship
continued on. You know, there were pockets of sound all over the United States. There was the St. Olaf sound. There was the Westminster sound, the Roger Wagner sound out here in California, you know, the Robert Shaw sound. But that Westminster sound was, you know, it was iconic. To be one of the successors of all that must be a real treasure. I heard a little bit of rehearsal today, and let me tell you, it's still alive and well. Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful. It's just, it's amazing to look at those young students all looking younger than a pair of socks that I own. You know, I mean, they're just amazing people. And I'm proud to say one of them is even a girl I encouraged to go to the choir college, who was a daughter of one of my staff singers, Lizzie Boyle. So I'm proud to see her standing in that choir. Her mother was a graduate of the college and one of the finest staff singers I had at the Cathedral in Philadelphia. Well, let's talk about Dr. Flummerfelt just a little bit. Came to the mm-hmm. choir college. I was certainly near the first class of his reign. Mm-hmm. I was there in 72, so he probably had a few years, but not many before I came along.
No, I think 71, or right yeah. there, the early part of the 70s.
Right.
So Joseph Flummerfelt was stepping in, he had no idea what he was stepping into, actually. He knew.
I could tell that from the first moment. He's a young puppy dog. It's like, oh my gosh.
Well, you know, of course, the thing was, this school was founded in this one mold, this one person's vision, this one mold. And it wasn't just a vision, it was a way of singing. John Finley Williamson was a singer himself and really promoted a very vocal approach, but a very approach that was unique to him. And so Joseph Flummerfelt is stepping in as the first music director that was not trained by John Finley Williamson.
Right.
You know, certainly there was lots of turmoil at that time, and Joe was an incredibly strong person to be able to shape and mold the choir college in his vision. But it's bigger than that, because at this point we have a school that was completely founded in sacred music, ministers of music, and now the everyone that was where most people were at the choir college, but especially Joe, knew that in order for the school to really continue its reach and to really reach the new artistic level that needed to for the 70s, 80s, and modern times, the scope had to be bigger. It had to be more than just in the sacred music focus. And at this point, the school began a long journey of spreading its wings, of becoming still spiritual, but less only religious based. And so it began to expand. And those caused some great growing pains in the early years.
I can imagine. Well, when you think of, I mean, probably from the very inception, having only church musicians as its alumni would be a financial nightmare. You get a penny a mass, and then you're supposed to give 2 cents to the college. But it was such a time at that time. We were just talking before the show. There must have been 20 organ teachers at the time I went there. So many that there wasn't even one for me. I had to go find one. You know, that we had two gigantic symphonic choirs that served the orchestras up and down the East Coast and beyond, all the way to Pittsburgh. You know, it was amazing, and the graduate students got to flip from one to the other. So we would prepare the works for this one, and then we would immediately, after the last cutoff, begin to work on the next pieces. And with Dr. Flummerfelt as our guide, sitting in the back of the room telling us every move we made wrong, mm-hmm. we got to prepare those students. And, you know, in the afternoon would walk a Leonard Bernstein or a Pierre Boulez to take up the work we had done, scary that it was. And, you know, you're just waiting for him to say, and who told you to do that? But there we were. We just always blamed it on Flum, but it was just a remarkable time. You know, making recordings with Leonard Bernstein, singing the Penderecki Passion, with Penderecki conducting with the National Symphony. I mean, there was just one thrill after the other, not to mention all the other amazing professors of organ we had there. You could look at the back cover of the American Organist magazine, and they were all walking on that campus. You know, mm-hmm. it was just, mm-hmm. it was such a great time. And the music reflected that. There was such a spirit there. The school was overflowing with students, and The music making was at such a high level. It was just phenomenal to be part of such a thing. I came from a conservatory out here in California, and to see music making at that level, and Jim Litton was the head of the Sacred Music Department, and Helen and John Kemp were there as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just got it all. You know, you got everything from high Anglican music all the way to, you know, mainstream Protestant music. It was a phenomenal time with Dr. Flummerfelt there. Well, let's hear a little bit of his work, and we'll talk more about him as we talk about the choir. And then we have to talk about you, Dr. Miller. What should we hear first?
Well, one of Joe's favorite composer was Johannes Brahms, so I think that we should listen to some Brahms. This is An die Heimat with Glenn Parker on the piano.
Excellent. And we will be right back. This is Music from the Tower with your host, John Romero. Stay tuned. Don't go away. And welcome back. You're listening to this episode of Music from the Tower with our friend Dr. Joe Miller, who is the conductor and the head of the choral department at Westminster Choir College, Princeton. And he is here because his choir is on tour, and we're going to hear a lot more about that tour, but I want to hear more about Dr. Joe Miller. All right, Joe, you are taking on the legacy of John Finley Williamson, Dr. Joseph Flummerfelt. How do you assume such huge shoes? You've got to be a very strong person and a fabulous musician, which I know you are. But
I'm good at channeling myself. So we have this wonderful space at the Choir College that has the portraits, and there's a portrait of John Finley Williamson and of Joseph Flummerfelt. And I just avoid that room at all costs.
Just stay out.
I just try not to think about it and just try to be Joe Miller.
Well, that's why it's easier being the first music director director of Christ Cathedral, and I try not to think about the incredible legacy of the Crystal Cathedral and Fred Swan and all of my successors in that boat. But you came to the Choir College. Joe retired in 2004, so you came around 2006?
Was yes.
that your first semester?
It was. 2006 was my first semester.
And what did that feel like?
I always grew up with this great respect for the choir college. I'd heard the choir on tour. My choir director in my home church in Knoxville, Tennessee was a choir, was a uh-huh. Westminster alum. And so I had grown up opening my octavos with the Westminster Choir College series on
yes.
top of, on the page. Yes. And so, I knew that it was an awesome responsibility, when I was coming, and I took it with deep seriousness. I was teaching at Western Michigan University and really loved my program and loved where I was living and had no intention of leaving. But when the opportunity came to be at Westminster, I really felt it was a calling. And so.
It is, you know, it's way more than I'll take this job, you know, whether it's Christ Cathedral or whether it's Westminster Choir College. If you're involved in music in any way, it's way bigger than us, you know. There's a reason why I'm here, and there's definitely a reason why you're at the Choir College. So you got your degrees at University of Cincinnati, both master's and doctorate in
yes,
choral conducting?
In choral conducting, and my undergraduate from the University of Tennessee.
Nice. Great. And how long were you in Michigan?
I was in Michigan 7 years, and then I was right here in California at Cal State Stanislaus before then.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't know that.
So coming to California always feels a little like coming home.
Well, I love
my time here.
Yeah. I grew up out here, and so it feels a little familiar to me too, although I'm a Northern California boy, so, the Southern Californians don't let me forget that. It's the other California, but, it is wonderful being back out here and, making music in this grand place. But there you were at the choir college, assuming these choirs. And were they still big? Were there still two symphonic choirs, or has it dwindled down, or what was it like in the first years?
There was one symphonic choir with 257 students.
Wow.
So no, the choir college, it was strong as ever. It was up to me to rebuild building the relationships with the Philadelphia Orchestra, with Carnegie Hall, with the New York Philharmonic is an ongoing process. And so one of the things that I needed to do when I came was to make sure that those relationships were solid.
Right.
And in the interim after Joe left, there was a little bit of uneasiness. And so it was up to me to just make sure that everyone knew that Westminster was fine and grounded and alive and well. And that really happened beautifully. First semester concerts with the New York Philharmonic. And then the very next year, an entire Mahler cycle with Berlin Staatskapelle.
Oh, exactly.
So, yeah, it was very active. And it was important to me for the Westminster Choir to continue its regular touring to make sure, you know, young people who we are encouraging to come to the choir college, it's a very short amount of time you have to be able to attract them and for them to know what Westminster is. And the only way we can do that is through the recordings, but the best way is live.
Oh, right.
So
see the kids, just see the enthusiasm. I could see it just in 10 minutes, you know. These kids love music, and they love where they go, and they're happy to be here. This is not the beginning of their tour, and they're just as exuberant as if they were right off the bus on the first concert. It's great, and that just means they love you, and they love what they do. Well, it's making the choir college and the symphonic choirs and the Westminster choir top-notch had to be your first job, you know, after somebody like Joe retires, you go through some interims. Orchestras no doubt were a little nervous. You know, is this still going to be, do I need to start developing my own symphony choir? I mean, East Coast orchestras got away with murder, you know. I mean, in St. Louis, we had to develop our own symphony choir. And I was a member of the St. Louis Orchestra for 14 years, and we had Amy Kaiser, who you may know.
Yes.
She was just amazing. I loved playing for her. And it was just an amazing time for that choir. But when you think of the East Coast choirs that really just count on Westminster to take care of that job, it's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. It is.
My 5 years in Philadelphia, just hearing the choir come and do those spectacular performances, everything from Bernstein Mass to, you know, I mean, just one great thing after the next. certainly made this alumni very proud, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It was great, great music making. So here we are on the 100th anniversary tour. Is that where we are now?
Yes.
I can't imagine it.
The choir college was founded in 1926, but the choir was founded in 1920. So we're celebrating the 100th year of the choir this year. And we're touring with a program, you know, it's how do you make a 100th anniversary program? Do you sing something from every decade?
Yeah,
that didn't seem like the right thing to do. So what I chose to do was to build a program based around the mission of the choir. And so I picked a piece to anchor the program that would speak to musicians and to sacred music. And the piece that I chose was Benjamin Britten's Hymn to St. Cecilia, which talks about inspiring musicians and creativity and deep commitment to a spiritual center. So I've taken that piece and broken it up into its sections, and then I intersperse with that. I bring some of the other things that are mission-based about the choir. And we are, the whole beginning talks about singing a new song. So we have the Canticum Novum text and Psalm 96, and to weave this sense of mission throughout the program.
Well, I can't wait. We're an hour or so away from this great concert. And for those of you who are listening, you will have long since missed it. But no doubt there will be some amazing recordings that will come from this tour. Are you planning a recording of these pieces?
We're not planning a formal recording. We will just have our live recordings.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good enough for us. The tour itself has five concerts in it. Is that five stops?
Five stops, beginning in Seattle and working our way through Boise and Salt Lake City, and then here to L.A., and then we'll end in La Jolla, San Diego area. And along the way, we're visiting high schools and colleges and sharing our music with them and learning from them as well. So outreach is always a big part when we tour.
Well, I think it is with any college choir or even... I remember when the American Boy Choir would tour, they would audition boys after the concert, you know, and several of my boys from St. Louis were accepted, and one mom even allowed him to go. You know? So not all moms are, you know, oh, this is great, go audition. And then they get in, oh, well, no, he could never move to Princeton. But we're happy to have that director out here in Los Angeles Children's Choir now. So
yes.
It's great to have. They were just here performing with Tenebrae a few weeks ago. So we have great partnerships. There's such great music making, as you remember, from California. But Southern California is just filled with amazing music making. Well, we're happy to have you here as part of it. And we're happy to have this tour make a little stop in our new Christ Cathedral. You were impressed with our new acoustics, huh?
Yes, I've been to the cathedral several times, but today my ears were completely opened. I couldn't believe the work that had been done in the cathedral. It's just a world-class space.
Well, we are so proud of the acoustics. They work very, very hard. The acoustician was a wonderful musician himself, but, you know, said you could just hear him all the way through these meetings. Somebody said, well, why is the choir loft so big? And he would reply, well, what if John wanted to do the double choir motets of Bach and have the choir separated on the, you know, I mean, he had a great answer for every single question. Yeah. But, you know, keeping the acoustics live and wonderful was a big priority, not only to him, but to our Bishop Van. Bishop Van, our ordinary, is a bishop from Springfield, Illinois, but also an organist. He was an organist at the Springfield Cathedral. Our rector, Father Christopher, was a parish musician before he was a priest. So both of them play the organ. Both of them get the idea of what sacred music is all about. Both of them whisked the Hazel Wright organ out the door and got it restored before anybody could say, well, why do we need that big thing? And so there's a great partnership and love for music. So everybody was concerned, right to the head of the bishops, was concerned about the acoustical properties of this wonderful building. Well, let's hear another piece, shall we?
Why don't we listen to O Magnum Mysterium by Daniel Elder, which the choir recorded several years ago on a recording called The Heart's Reflection. So this is part of that mission of, it speaks in our program, speaks to the mission of this thing of music and relating it to the birth of Christ being this great mystery, how it seeps into us. And so let's listen to O Magnum Mysterium.
And this is the Westminster Choir, conducted by Dr. Joe Miller. And you are listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio, and we will be right back. And we are back. This is Music from the Tower. And in our tower today is Dr. Joe Miller from Westminster Choir College and the conductor and the director of choral activities, the conductor of the Westminster Choir. And he is now, we've been talking about their tours and about the history. What a rich history. All 100 years they're celebrating on this particular tour. But what's the next 100 years look like? What's coming up? What do you got in your bag of tricks to entice us to stay tuned to Westminster Choir College?
Well, I will say our schedule is as active as ever. Going back, one of the things that Joseph Flummerfelt brought to Westminster was this great affiliation with the Spoleto Festival and the Westminster Choir. So since 1971, and this year at the Spoleto Festival, we're doing a wonderful new opera by Rhiannon Giddens on Omar Ibn Said, who was the last slave ship to come to the United States into Charleston. And he was a scholar, and it's the story, and it's his story. And he actually wrote fluent Arabic and wrote this story on his prison wall. And it's been turned into an opera by Rhiannon Giddens. So we have that to look forward to. We're also doing this wonderful project with Gesualdo's Responsoria. So we're taking some music of the Responsoria and putting it with the wonderful photography of Tom Kiefer, which will be a very interesting program, and a Beethoven Ninth Symphony. So it's going to be a rich Spoleto this year, and the festival continues to do really amazingly well.
What are the dates of those?
It opens Memorial Day weekend and runs for the next 2 weeks.
And how many students do you take on that?
We take 40 students.
Wow,
40 students, yeah. And they formed the choir, and they're at the kind of heart of the Splato Festival, so they'll be in 5 or 6 productions while they're there.
Those are things those kids will never, ever, ever forget. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
Do you get to stay the whole time?
Yes, I get to stay the whole time, yes. I'm fortunately one of the artistic directors of the festival, so we have to. I help to see all the cogs are working at the right time together.
Well, I'm sure you do it perfectly. And what about the symphonic choir? What will they be up to next season?
Well, symphonic choir is just releasing the Mahler 8th Symphony on Deutsche Grammophon label with the Philadelphia Orchestra and Yannick Nézet-Séguin. So we have a wonderful release that's just happened. We've just come off a wonderful B minor mass. And the spring will be a Ravel Le Fond des Sortilèges, a beautiful piece followed by a Beethoven 9th Symphony and a new work by Gabby Frank. So we have a very busy spring with the entire student body.
Isn't Yannick just an amazing man? I mean, working with him just during my 5 years, it was just, he's phenomenal.
You know, he's one of the conductors of our time.
I think so, too. Right from the beginning. And he had a little rocky start, you know, when he started in Philadelphia. Tempi's were too fast. Pieces kind of unraveled a little bit. There were all sorts of little issues. People, you know, not great reviews. And I'm telling you, he showed his stuff. He is just top-notch, and now doing the Met on top of it, you know. But my work with him, it was phenomenal. And he was helping me with the papal visit right before I left. He conducted that papal mass for us. Mm-hmm. And, he was just right in his element all the way through, easy to work with, just, you know, like we're talking now. It was just wonderful. So I'm sure you must love working with him.
I do, and he's a choral musician at heart.
Well, that's part of it, too. You know, a lot of these conductors are not choral people, you know, so they don't quite get, you know, they want to fix things, but they don't know how. But you could tell he really not only got it, but knew how to fix things that he wanted differently. It was fun observing him work with the choir, college choir. What other orchestras are you singing with this year?
This year, our season is solely with Philadelphia Orchestra.
Really?
They're keeping us quite busy.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
But recently, with the Berlin Philharmonic and with the New York Philharmonic.
So is that at Carnegie Hall? Is that where those concerts are?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Wonderful. I love the Philadelphia Hall. Do you like performing in there?
I do.
It's beautiful.
And I've worked in there enough. I mean, it's a learning curve, you know, learning what works and what doesn't work. I'm sure you're experiencing that here in the cathedral
yes, we
as well.
Are definitely in the beginning stages of learning how to use our building. You know, the first, it's one thing to do Sunday Mass, but like our first big Christmas concert, you know, we opened with a Schutz piece with choirs all over the place. It's like, that's new. Okay, let's see how we can make that work. I got the opportunity. I was so lucky in Philly in my very short time there, 5 years. I got to play the afternoon organ demos for the tours.
Oh, yes.
On Saturday afternoon, the guild would rotate through 4 of us. And, oh, it was so much fun. And people loved it. They'd open the doors so there'd be all this echo, you know, in the building. And it was great fun. What a wonderful hall that is. Philly is so lucky to have that beautiful space. And
yes,
having Westminster Choir College arrive at their door to be, to be the chorus. How wonderful. What else is going on in your world to tell us?
We have a very strong graduate program, which is one of my focuses, and that's both in sacred music and in choral conducting. We have an international class, so it's wonderful to see students from the Philippines and from Ecuador and China, and so we have students coming from all over the world, and that creates a wonderful synergy to have that kind of diversity, to let them learn from each other, and so that's incredibly strong. Our music education and vocal performance programs continue just to turn out outstanding students that are working all over the world, and our sacred music students continue to kind of be at the core of our spiritual center of the school.
And I'm proud to say that we have 2 recent graduates that in our choir program here, 2 of our staff singers this year that we hire. We have 12, and 2 are brand new graduates of Westminster, and we have 2 old Westminster grads. And then we have a very old Westminster director. And so, very, very old. But nonetheless, our place is still, as so many places all over the country, benefiting from the amazing work that you do there. So thank you for all of that. The program, it's so wonderful to have students from all over the place until it's theory class. And they can all take things down by dictation in 1 second. And the American kids are going, oh, could you give me the starting note? What about the key? You know, and the Asian kids have written it down 3 times already, 4 times. And that was always the hard part of that.
There's a lot of wonderful training going on in the world.
Gosh,
yes.
You know, and fixed dough makes it easier to have pitch memory, I suppose. But nonetheless, I am so proud that things are going so, so well. These segments with you have been amazing. I think we're going to listen to one more piece before we switch over to Dr. Marshall. So let's tell us what we're going to hear now.
The most recent release of the Westminster Choir is a disc of the Frank Martin's unbelievable Mass for Double Choir. Mm. And so we're very proud of this recording, and maybe we could listen to the Sanctus.
And where was this recorded?
This was recorded at the Savings and Loan Bank in Troy, New York.
Isn't that something?
Which is an amazing hall that has never been touched since the turn of the century, and the acoustics are perfection.
Just, oh, how wonderful. Well, we will look forward to that. This is the Martin Mass, the Sanctus. And when we come back, we will hear more about the Choir College from its very own dean. This is Music from the Tower. Don't go away. We have lots more. All right, welcome back. This is Music from the Tower, and this is your host, John Romeri, and we have been enjoying Dr. Joe Miller from the Choir College, and now we have Dr. Marshall Onofrio, who is the dean of the Westminster Choir College. He's been there 3 years, 14 years as the associate dean, and came before that from the Marshall University, West Virginia, so there is all sorts of history here. He's the champion for the Choir College right now, and is on tour with the choir, which speaks volumes, I think, for any dean to be traveling along with the choir. Welcome, Dr. Marshall. It was wonderful to have you. So what's going on with this Choir College? The whole world wants to know.
Amen. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate it very much. And yes, I am the champion. I'm one of many champions in reality, a wonderful team of people, and all of the wonderful alumni like yourself. We are all champions for this. Interestingly enough, if you think about the history of the college, and you heard some of that from Joe Miller recently, the idea of movement is in its DNA, if you will. And each time the college moved, it grew. And it extended its reach, if you will. It did more things. And that's about to happen yet again. But a couple of quick reviews, if you don't mind, because they become the foundation for what is about to happen. So we were talking earlier with Dr. Miller about the idea of these early tours. And you think about John Finley Williamson as truly a visionary in the 20s and 30s, in the middle of the Depression, taking this incredible choir literally to Europe on multiple occasions. They went to Russia before that was a thing to do.
Imagine.
I mean, just, you know, the incredible help of Catherine Howe Talbot and eventually the Hillman family and others, and then a world tour in the midst of the Cold War of 56, 57 to tour the world. And all of that vision is so much in the DNA of the place. Alongside that was, of course, this great history with orchestras beginning 1939, Fantasia, the great release with Stokowski and so many other things. And that all continues to the present day. As Joe was telling you, some of our current orchestral programs and our wonderful relationship with Unique Nezé Sagan. A few years back, we did a Central Park concert with the New York Philharmonic and Andrea Bocelli. It's now a mainstay of PBS during their fundraising days. and you'll see a picture of the symphonic choir right there behind Bocelli and Celine Dion and others, and things like that just kind of happen all the time with us. And we've had some great concerts, the Orchestra of St. Luke's and the Rachmaninoff Vespers and so many great things that continue to happen. And I'm pleased to tell you that we're probably just about 2 weeks away from signing several contracts for next year, again with major orchestras. I'm not at liberty to tell you just yet who they are because we're finalizing all the concert
dates. Wanted to hear it first on Music from the Tower.
I wish I could. But those relationships are terribly important to us because they help shape what these students do. And it is so much a part of where they go on. And we are so proud of our graduates. And some names that I'll just drop that I think will be familiar to many of your audience. Kara Duffy, who teaches at the University of Notre Dame, but so active in the opera world, just helped premiere Missy Mazzoli's Breaking Waves. And Laquita Mitchell, of course, very active and very well renowned for her roles in Porgy and Bess. We've had faculty-student collaborations for decades. So earlier we were talking about John Finley Williamson and how things have evolved, and it's now about 60 years that we added the music education program to what had been at that point a very thriving sacred music program, and that music ed program continues to thrive. We have nearly 100% placement for our graduates. Our faculty and students often co-author. In fact, there's a textbook that is used by every New York City primary school that was written by one of our faculty and one of our recent alums and things like that. We've had several Metropolitan Opera winners out there, including Laquita and others. So those kinds of successes are part of where we are. The graduate training that you represent is still there. Our graduates gain entrance into primary doctoral programs literally around the world. They go out and take jobs teaching in the public schools, in church schools. They go out and teach in small colleges and so on. All of that is part of this growth that we continue to push. So that's the foundation, if you will. So now to your question, what's next? So as part of what is going to be the evolution of Westminster Choir College, by this August, we will actually be moving the Choir College and all its programs and faculty and students 7 miles south to the main campus of Rider University. As many of your listeners may know, Rider University merged with Westminster Choir College in 1991. The first year of affiliation was 1992. And for the last 27, 28 years, Ryder has supported the campus in Princeton. It has become difficult to continue to do that for many reasons. And as a result, in order to try to secure for Westminster a thriving future, a decision has been made to move it. So literally as we speak, Gill Chapel on the Lawrenceville campus has been gutted. They are removing the asbestos as we speak, literally started this past Monday.
To start with a new relationship.
And it will have a whole brand new interior. We will be installing the Scheide organ from the Princeton campus in Gill Chapel. We are migrating all the academic programs. So we've had lots of questions about the organ program, the sacred music program, the piano program. They are all migrating. Everything is going to Lawrenceville. So that will all begin this August. We will break ground probably the week after commencement, which would put it the third week in May, on a substantial 24,000 square foot addition to the Fine Arts building. And that will be the start of what will be a growth period, we hope, for both facilities and programs. So currently, the Westminster College of the Arts, over which I am the dean, is comprised of Westminster Choir College and the School of Fine and Performing Arts. The School of Fine and Performing Arts is, as its name would suggest, musical theater, dance. We have a program in arts, entertainment, and industries management. We have a brand new program in game design, a program in popular music, and so on. So the integration of these two, first of all, is about 630 students, over 100 faculty, and a couple of dozen majors, many of which, as I say, are very new, like game design and industries management. So the synergies that I think are going to come out of that are yet to be written, and they are terribly exciting. So imagine a student in the Bachelor of Music and Composition program at Westminster Choir College who also could write music for a game and interactive design media program. Imagine that a voice performance student who likely at some point is going to be some type of an arts administrator could be anything from literally running their own private voice studio to perhaps being a major contributor to Lincoln Center and other places where we currently have graduates. So they could be voice performance and pick up coursework in either an undergraduate or graduate degree in arts administration. And things such as we have a Master of Voice Pedagogy at Westminster with a track in musical theater. We have an undergraduate BFA in musical theater with 140 majors in it. So the synergies there are wonderful to behold, and I think they are going to write yet a new chapter for Westminster Choir College. And I want to use that word again, thriving. We're really trying to build, again, a secure foundation in the current day of 2020 for the next 100 years.
And will the name Westminster Choir College be somewhere in this mix?
Thank you so much for asking. Absolutely, it does. It will continue. And you will see that many of the signature events that we do every year, such as Readings and Carols, which is just celebrated its 27th year at Princeton University Chapel, will continue as well. So those are important steps.
And how about organ majors, sacred music majors? What about those folks?
Those curricula actually have both just been redesigned, and I'm hoping in these next couple of years that things will rejuvenate. Earlier you mentioned that in the 70s in particular, there were so many organ teachers and so many organ students.
Oh.
As you know as well or better than us, it's a very different day today.
Right.
So we've reorganized in particular the sacred music undergrad and grad programs. At the undergraduate level now, there are four little tracks you can pick from, so you can actually concentrate in bell choir. You can concentrate in urban church ministry and so on and so forth. So we're looking forward to more and more of that. And in fact, the international population that Joe mentioned often includes graduate students in sacred music. The university has just hired its first international recruiting person. He has just come back at our request. He has visited both China and Korea to reestablish relationships in China and to, in Korea and to establish some relationships in China. So we're looking forward to more and more of that connection as well, because so many of them come from traditions where they are literally seeking training, especially in sacred music. And there is a strong keyboard tradition, shall we say, aborning in China. So we hope for the future of that as well.
Well, coming here to Christ Cathedral for myself was a total awakening. You know, it's my fourth cathedral, and the first three were just little cookie-cutter cathedrals. You could go down the list, and you knew exactly what I was going to do in each one. Not so Christ Cathedral. You know, we have 12 masses, four languages. We have a full-time director of music who comes with a degree, which isn't easy to find. We had to go all the way to Hanoi. And he was the, you know, preparer of the symphony choir there. He was just a marvelous musician. We brought him right here to Christ Cathedral because the church just doesn't look like it did in 1972. In the East Coast, churches are empty. Yes. On the West Coast, churches are brimming full. About 12,000 people roll through our doors every single weekend. It's just unbelievable. And if you just come and bring your little Europe-centric program, you can attract one mass full, and the other 11 masses need something else, you know. And to be able to do it with training and finesse and with competence means that you, as the trainer of the trainers, have to step it up. You know, you've got to look at it with new eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most difficult piece. You know, where does someone going that really wants to give their life to sacred music, where do they go? What school do they choose? Do they go to Yale? Do they go to Juilliard? Do they go to Eastman? Or do they go to Westminster Choir College at Rider? You know, that's the question everybody wants to know. Do I send my child there? Is that the place? So is it?
It is. You have hit the nail on the head. We, across our programs, have to address what you just said because there's almost nothing that looks like it used to. So my early training was in music education and trumpet performance, and my public school teaching in the late 1970s was in a very different type of school environment than you would find anywhere, particularly in the Northeast. So again, an exciting part of this, by moving to Lawrenceville, where there is a 40% diverse population, our music education majors will experience a great breadth of camaraderie. They will see what it's like if they happen to pick a teaching position in, fact, an urban multilingual school. With regard to sacred music, we've been talking about this a great deal, and a lot of what we've been trying to do is to see how we might leverage some of our current programming. You're probably aware that we have the Conducting Institute at Oxford. In St. Stephen's House of Oxford, every July, the Westminster Williamson Voices are part of the residency program for 24 conductors. They come from around the world.
Mike Zubert was one of my
exactly right, Michael Zubert, exactly.
And Michael went two times.
Exactly, twice. And his parents are always hosting us. In fact, they will host the Williamson Voices again literally on Monday for 3 days of recording in the Basilica.
Right.
So they are great friends of the college. Yeah. Absolutely. So how can that become? Could there be a conducting institute in Beijing, in Stockholm, in Ghana, and so on? So
At Christ Cathedral.
Absolutely. The West Coast would be wonderful. So a lot of what we're looking at is how could that do that? So right now, the Sacred Music graduate students can elect to do their final conducting recital at the Conducting Institute in Oxford. Isn't that great? You, again, hit the nail on the head. So for me, the excitement of trying to make this happen is a chance for a thriving future, improved facilities, the sense of remembering where this all started. It started with a person's vision that was about excellence. And he looked at that in a way in 1920 with the Westminster Choir, slightly different way in 1926 with the Westminster Choir School, soon to become college. And for us now, as sort of the, I think you used the word living beneficiaries, perhaps, as the latest incarnations of that, that's through us, it's through you, it's through your students, it's through your friends who have students. We are carrying on what I guess I'll say is maybe our biggest legacy, which is that this is bigger than us.
Well, if anybody can pull it off, it's Dr. Marshall Onofrio is my guess, because you've got the enthusiasm and the vision that it's going to take to pull this off. And we are all behind it. The Alumni Association here in Los Angeles, all of us are just anxiously awaiting the next chapter. You know, and it's just going to be wonderful. We're going to end today's program with one more piece from Westminster Choir. This is Oh, How Amiable of Vaughan Williams. And you have been listening to Music from the Tower. And as always, I encourage you, I beg you, to go out and listen to great music in live performance. And that live performance might include Westminster Choir the next time they're in your town. So thank you for listening. This is Music from the Tower with John Romeri. Today's guests were Dr. Joe Miller from Westminster Choir College and the Dean of Westminster, Dr. Marshall Onofrio. Thank you very much for being with us. And until next episode of Music from the Tower, have a great week.